Welcome to Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, a podcast presentation of Black Barrel Media and Ritual Productions. This is an episode-by-episode look at the award-winning TV show Friday Night Lights, created by Peter Berg. I'm Stacey Orstano. I played Mindy Colette Riggins.
And I'm Derek Phillips, and I played Billy Riggins.
Our assumption is that you, our listeners, have already watched the show.
But if you haven't already, go watch Friday Night Lights, which is currently streaming on Netflix and Peacock TV. Because there will be spoilers in our podcast.
If you want to support our show, subscribe for free to our YouTube channel where you can access exclusive content. We have a YouTube handle that makes it easy to find us. That's youtube.com/@clear-eyes-full-hearts. Also, we are continuing to release new episodes of the podcast every other week.
That's right. So join us as we recap all your favorite episodes, chat with amazing guests,
and answer your questions. Email us anything you want to know at cleareyesfullheartspod@gmail.com. Today, Season 5, Episode 3, The Right Hand of the Father. It was written by Patrick Massett and directed by David Boyd. Our synopsis from NBC reads, Coach Taylor struggles to impose discipline, and Vince doesn't want his newly paroled father attending a game.
There's a ton to unpack in this episode, but before we get into it all, we're going to answer a few of your fan questions. Okay, our first question comes from Evan W., who asks, do you still keep in contact with Kyle Chandler? What was he like off camera?
Kyle who?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I love Kyle Chandler.
Yeah, I haven't seen Kyle in probably about a year and a half. But yeah, I mean, we keep in contact. Kyle was just a fun guy off camera. I remember one time in particular, we were shooting a couple of scenes, and Kyle said, hey, man, I got a hall pass tonight. The wife is in town, but I think I might, you know, be free. Do you want to go out and grab a couple drinks? And we had way too many drinks. I had way too many drinks, personally, and I just remember being stuck in the back of a rickshaw on the way home. He took a picture of me as I got pedaled off to my hotel that night. But yeah, Kyle's a good dude.
Anything that you guys think he would be off camera is exactly what he is.
I remember being out with Kyle, and the one thing that I take away and the one thing that I've told everybody that I've worked with on this show is a younger guy in this business who one day wants to get married and one day wants to settle down and maybe have kids and a family. He was what I looked up to.
Yeah.
Like, okay, if this guy can make it work, I can make this work, you know? And obviously, guys, Kyle's a really, really good-looking guy. And there were times where we'd be out and girls would come running over. And, like, I remember thinking, I don't think I could handle that. You know, I don't know if I could handle being faithful and all that. But it was like, this guy, he's the real deal. He's a legit good guy.
Such a good husband, such a good dad. Those two girls.
We've talked about this a lot of times on the show about how it trickles down. You know, the fish stinks from the head down. And number one on the call sheet and blah, 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 blah. And Kyle was the leader of our show in a lot of respects. And
yeah.
And I looked up to him as a leader, father, and as a husband, and as an actor, and just as a way to carry yourself on a set. He's a dignified, good guy.
Yeah. And also fell in love with Texas, moved his family out there while we were filming, and then became a volunteer fireman in his city, and also has the cutest little Jack Russell Terrier. And it's like, we get it. You're adorable. Calm down.
It's one of those things where art kind of imitates life. He's a lot like Coach Taylor in that respect.
He really is.
Just a good, solid guy.
Except he's like funnier and a little more sarcastic, which I love.
And a little bit more goofy, I think, in real life than Coach Taylor is. But yeah.
Yeah. He's heaven. And yes, we still keep in touch.
He would come back out to LA occasionally. And I remember he called me one time and he's like, hey, man, you want to go to a Dodger game? And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. If I'm going to a Dodger game with Kyle, we're going to have amazing seats. And we get to the stadium. I'm like, where are we sitting? He's like, oh, no, we're buying tickets. And so we sat in the nosebleeds together at like Dodger Stadium. And
I was thinking, dude, he's just a regular guy.
He's just a normal guy. Like, literally just a normal guy.
He's like, Stacey, I'm just Kyle from Georgia. I used to shovel dog poop off the ground. Except he said a different word for poop. I couldn't say it. Okay. Next question from Jillian S., who asks, how long did it typically take each of you to go through hair and makeup, wear their touch-ups while you were shooting? Guys, whoa, you want to know about how long Derek Phillips sits in a hair and makeup trailer? Woo!
I may have sat in there longer than I was actually getting my hair
That's
or makeup done.
That's what I was going to say. We just sit and talk.
But, I mean, generally for me, it was 10 minutes. And speaking of Kyle Chandler, once again, I mean, Kyle would come in, grab some, like, dippity-doo, throw it in his hair, and then leave.
Uh-huh. Mess his hair up a little bit and leave.
Yeah, I don't think he ever sat down. I don't think he ever had makeup on this show.
He didn't. There was no concealer or no powder. He didn't do any of it. He didn't want it.
That's just how ridiculously good-looking he is. And for guys, it's pretty simple on most television shows. I mean, I would go in, they'll put like a little base on your face just to take down any redness or whatever.
A little concealer under those dark eye circles.
Yeah, maybe put some stuff under your eyes, cover up some blemishes or whatever, and then put some powder on there just so when you're out in the sun or wherever you are that you're not glistening and shining. I have sensitive skin, so I had to put sunscreen on when we were shooting outside.
I was in there a little bit longer, but honestly, I stayed. Guys, my favorite place on set is the hair and makeup trailer. It's where you get all the best gossip.
You get all the good gossip, plus it's air conditioned.
It's air conditioned. There's music, and people sing and laugh, and like that's kind of where everybody ends up gravitating to hang out on a good set.
I will say that it does kind of suck for women as opposed to men when it comes to hair and makeup, because in general, women do have to be in there longer than the men do. Like if my call time was 6:30 a.m., Stacey's was going to be 5:30.
Yeah, and we were shooting the same scene.
Yeah, and we'd be shooting the same scene, but it just takes longer. They've got to do the hair process alone.
We have hair. Hair is forever.
Like I remember walking in there one day and Connie had, they had like teased up half of her hair, you know, so one side of it, and I walked in, I was like, that looks really good. And she was just not thrilled that I was giving her crap that early in the morning. But it does. It takes a lot longer for the women. One thing about our show in general is that all the women would come in and they still look gorgeous every single day before they even got hair and makeup. There's a lot of shows I've worked on where there are women, you come walking in and you're like, whoa, who's that? Then in 2 hours later after some deep sanding, they're like, wow.
Yeah, we didn't get, amazing. There was no glam on this show.
But I'm not even saying glam as much as it is that like you guys were all very attractive, very beautiful women to begin with.
Jeez, Derek, calm down.
I'm just calling it like I see it, Stace. Oh, yes, we did have touch-ups throughout the day.
Yeah, they were good about that.
Especially in this last season where, as I said, we were shooting summer for winter, basically. So it was hot out there and, you know, a lot of sweat. So a lot of powder and a lot of, you know, covering up blemishes.
Those little matte
sheets.
Stuff
like that. Yes, I remember those specifically. They have these little matte sheets.
Oil blotters. They're amazing. They're so gross.
I also remember hair and makeup coming around with those little fans. And we'd sit there with little fans on our face just to keep us from sweating. You know, umbrellas in the heat. Our final question comes from Curtis in Tennessee, who asks, did you ever have to go into ADR for FNL? Or do you have any funny ADR stories that you could share? For those of you at home that don't know, ADR stands for Automated Dialogue Replacement. And this is the process of recording dialogue in a studio after filming to replace the original recorded lines. This is usually due to bad sound quality that was recorded during the original take. We always wore lavalier mics. How do you pronounce it, Stace? Lavalier?
It's lavalier, but we didn't always, because sometimes we were in a strip club and there was no place that we could put it on my costume, but mostly we had lavs.
Yeah, I mean, I think barring maybe one or two scenes where I was in my underwear, I always had a lavalier mic on my body.
It's hard because there's a mic pack and you have to hide the mic pack and then find a place to put the lav on the body, which is like a little black sticky on one. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I just learned?
What?
Boom mic is first. Boom mic is always the go-to first. The lav is the second, like as far as sound goes. Like that's your security.
Wow, it's like the safety.
I would have thought it was backwards, but it's not.
I would have thought that too.
Like rely on the boom first.
Huh. But yeah, there's always a boom mic on set too. So there's a boom operator. There's literally a person holding a big, huge, basically what looks like a gigantic broomstick with a...
I can't fathom doing that job. It makes my arm hurt watching them work. It's all just up here. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're holding it over their heads 9 times out of 10 in the shot and then moving it back and forth from whichever actor is speaking. But yeah, I don't know that I have any funny ADR stories, but basically, usually what would happen is, you know, I'd smack my mic or there'd be something running over, you know, an airplane overhead or something like that. So you'd have to go in and do ADR, which is basically just trying to cover up that sound or get a clean take of it.
Is it weird that I love ADR? I freaking love it.
I don't.
And I'm really good at it.
I think I'm decent at it, but I don't love it. I mean, it's tough to match the emotion that you had on the day.
Yeah.
What do you love about it?
I'm just really, really good at it. And there's something about, I don't know. I used to do Foley work. Guys, Foley work is any sounds that they add into after the movie. So when I was in New York, they would hire dancers and we would go in and essentially we would match footsteps that were on screen. So like we would walk in heels on leaves and match the footprints of the people walking on the scene or in rain, splashing through puddles or whatever. And it was just so fun just rhythmically to have to match. And I think I still enjoy matching rhythmically with my own mouth in my own voice. They do like dub over anime too. It's all the same thing. I find the challenge really rewarding.
Yeah, because with anime, I mean, they basically already have the flaps from the Japanese version, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we have to count and make sure our words match the flap. And it's match just the mouth flaps. Opening. Yeah.
And the flaps are when the mouth opens and closes.
Yeah.
So you're kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah, except your own flapping mouth.
Huh.
I love it.
There have been one or two projects that I've worked on where they had no clean audio. It's not usually because there's a bad sound person, but on these particular instances, it was like we had a sound person that didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
And now you're having to go in and basically ADR every single line in the film, and that takes away from your performance as an actor. So that can be really, really tough. You know, on FNL, it was like one or two lines here or there, and 9 times out of 10, it was my fault. It was me not realizing that my mic was on my chest and I'd smack my chest, or me putting on a jacket and it's going on the mic.
Also, you get paid again. I mean, not like a day's work, but you get paid to do ADR. I don't hate that part.
I don't hate that part at all. Yeah. I mean, basically, like, if I remember correctly, it's like $500 a session. And there are times where I've gone in and like say one line and then they're like, yep, you're done. And it's $500. It's the easiest $500 you'll ever make in your life.
Okay, bye.
Thank you guys. Keep the questions coming. These really help us. We love to hear from you, so please keep them coming. Stacey, ready to jump into this episode?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay, buddies. We saw the outside of Buddies, and I was like, wait, what? But as soon as we got inside, I was like, oh, I know that place. I spend a lot of time there. It felt very familiar.
Yeah, Buddies Bar is definitely hopping right now. It is packed. And for those of you at home going, why does this guy singing look so familiar? Well, that's Grammy-winning blues singer Gary Clark Jr. Only the best musicians perform at Buddies. Buddies like the CBGBs of Dillon, Texas. He's the troubadour, the whiskey-a-go-go.
God, we had some good musicians on that show.
We really did have some good musicians. Those days were always fun, too, when we were shooting at Buddy's Bar.
Oh, yeah, because they, like, really played for us.
They really played, but then on top of it, like, probably 90% of our cast was there. So it was a chance for me to hang out with people that I never really got to hang out with on a regular
basis.
Yeah,
like, I didn't do scenes with Michael B., but we got to hang out when we were at Buddy's.
Yeah.
It was fun. Those days
were
super fun.
Everybody gets together at Buddy's Bar.
Okay, Vince's dad is here. I can't figure out in Vince if this is good or bad, or if he doesn't know yet. And I just want to like make sure my expectations aren't too much because I need good things.
I think it's mixed, to be honest.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell by Vince's reaction that this is not a good thing. It's fairly ominous.
But mom seems happy, so that makes me happy. I'm conflicted, and I'm along for the ride, and I need good things.
It's two alphas in one place. You know, the young lion having to fight his
father.
He's been
gone for a while, too, though, so that's so weird to have somebody in your space when they've been gone that long.
He has been gone for a while, and we learned fairly quickly that Vince and his dad have a pretty checkered past. I mean, there's definitely some history between these two. There's some animosity. There's anger. It's going to get heavy.
Oh, boy.
I'll say that. It's going to get heavy.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not setting my expectations up too high. Guys, I'm just going to go ahead and give you a little bit of a warning. This episode made me very mad in places, and it starts with this video. The video itself makes me mad. I need someone to take the fall for this. It shouldn't be out there in the universe.
I agree with you that the video shouldn't be out there in the universe. Yeah, 100%. I love in this scene that Coach says, we didn't do any of that crap when we were kids, and there's a look on both he and Tammy's face after he says it, and you know that they 100% did do crap like this when they were kids. The big difference here is that, and even for me too growing up, like we did stupid stuff growing up. I don't know that I ever did anything like this, but we did stupid stuff, and the big difference is that we didn't have an internet to post it on.
We didn't have cell phones. There was literally no capturing of what we did. Unless you had like a disposable camera, but that wouldn't even show how bad it is. So yeah, we didn't have like video footage of the stuff.
You know Mike Schrader. I have a good friend, Mike Schrader, who is also another local Dallas actor and a teacher. And Mike, when we were in college, we were in the same theater together at Baylor University. For like maybe 4 or 5 days, Mike walked around with a camcorder that he had.
Yeah.
And he shot some video of all of us just interacting in college. And he called me about 4 years ago and he's like, dude, do you remember like me walking around with that camcorder in college? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, I found those tapes. And I was like, get out. And he's like, next time you're in town, you're going to have to watch these videos with me. And I sat and he literally warned me. He was like, you're going to want to kick your own ass.
Oh, no. Why?
Just because I was just a schmuck. There was a level of confidence that I think I had at like 19 or 20 years old. I kind of walked around like, you know, rooster feathers out, you know, and it's just, I thought I was the cat's meow, so to speak, but I weighed like 130 pounds. I had zits everywhere. I was dating this girl who was gorgeous. I mean, a stunner. And she looked like a full adult woman, you know? And I'm like, why is she with me? And then on top of it, I was like rude to her in one take that Mike had. And I'm watching this going, I am so glad that we didn't have the internet back then to share all this stuff. Because it's a lifetime of embarrassment in 5 minutes of watching this video. But as Mike said, he's like, you're going to want to kick your own ass. And then I watched it and I'm like, yeah, I want to kick my own ass. But that guy's way younger and stronger and more virile. He would totally whoop my ass even if he was lighter.
It's kind of cool to have that to look back on though.
It is, but it also makes me very thankful that you could make mistakes as a kid and you could do stupid things and it didn't follow you for the rest of your life.
You can't do that now, can you?
No, not at all.
There's just so much more responsibility on kids these days, which is what is taking me into my anger a little bit in this episode, because this is new for me. I am not on the Tammy train in this episode, and it starts here when she takes this 15 or 16, I'm assuming, this rally girl that was being passed around like a puppet in the video, and she says, you let that happen to you. You let those boys do that to you, which to me is victim shaming. We're shaming that girl for the actions of the boys around her. I was incredibly angry with the writing, and I was incredibly angry at Tammy. And in the moment I wrote this, I don't know where the story goes forward, but I hope there's some sort of conclusion to it.
I get where you're coming from. I think, and I'm going to try and defend Tammy's actions here. Mm-hmm. I think Tammy is just trying to tell Mara, this is the girl that we're talking about, who's played wonderfully by Denise Williamson. I didn't personally feel like it was like victim blaming as much as it was her basically saying, you need to be aware of your surroundings and you need to keep your composure. She's not in trouble. Mara's not in
right,
trouble.
I
She's
get
not
that.
Getting suspended from school or any yeah. of that stuff. And I think Tammy's just trying to protect her. I mean, I don't have a daughter, but I was watching this scene and thinking, if I had a daughter, obviously I'd be pissed off at every one of the boys in this scene and I'd want to skull crush them. You know what I mean? What they did is completely and totally wrong. But I would also have to be frank with my hypothetical daughter about the fact that, unfortunately, as a woman, you can't get that drunk in a public setting because men will take advantage of it. And it's I'm not blaming her for that, but I am saying you need to be aware of that and you need to be aware of the fact that men are, by and large, a bunch of jerks in situations like that.
I hear you. It was the words, you let those boys do that to you. And in us teaching our girls that, yeah, you really do need to protect yourself and watch how much you drink and you're around there, the conversation is never, we need to teach our boys not to treat women terribly when they drink. Boys get to be boys and have fun and drink, and girls don't. I'm not saying that's what you are saying. That's what society says. It's never, let's teach our boys not to do that.
No, but I think it would have been nice if we would have seen the writers let Tammy go after the boys on this one as well. I mean, Coach goes after the boys who are involved in this.
I do like what Coach does later.
Kicks two kids off the team who joke about it.
Yeah, I did like that. It was literally just the wording of you let those boys do that to you, because what it should have been was, I'm so sorry that happened to you. I'm so sorry that this is the world where you're not allowed to have fun like that. How did that make you feel? Not you let those boys do that to you. That was my major concern with this. We can move on because there's more coming later.
No, I get you. And I get where you're coming from with that. I do. I gotta say, just in general, shame on everyone that was there. Shame on everyone who participated in it and didn't stop it from happening.
It's so yucky. It's so gross. But it happens. I totally get it. It super happens.
No, it happens all the time. There was a guy when I was in high school. I'm not going to name names, but there was a guy when I was in high school, and word got around through the grapevine that he had sexually assaulted this girl when she was passed out at a party. None of us knew about it. We all found out about it. And of course, you know, the guys kind of took it upon themselves at this point to make this guy's life a living hell. Like, we paintballed his house. We egged it. You know, it's like, I'm not saying that that's the mature response to it.
When you're that age, maybe it is the goal.
Maybe it is, to use a really bad analogy, but it's like watching a dog correct another dog. If you allow that kind of behavior to happen, it's going to continue to happen. It was our version of canceling back in 1993, essentially. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We weren't going to allow that to happen. We were going to put this guy on notice and kind of make his life a living hell for the next couple of months.
I just do wish on a global scale there was more of a conversation of, let's teach our boys how to act instead of, let's 100%. Teach our girls to protect themselves. We can move on with the story. Guys, it's Cress Williams. I love Chris Williams. I love him so much, but he maybe seems like not a good guy. It's so weird when you see somebody that you love and that you have loved as an actor. He plays monolith good guys.
Yeah.
Or just like regular guys. And now he's a bad guy, and I am conflicted because he's also very good at it.
It just makes me, once again, love all the fathers of Dylan.
Ooh, the dad club.
Yeah, what is in the water in this town? I mean, all the dads in this town are awful. Barring Coach, basically, and maybe Landry's dad.
Coach and a little Buddy and Landry. That's what we got.
Buddy's a schmuck, too. I mean, I love Buddy, but, like, Buddy's done some pretty terrible things.
You're,
basically broke up his family with an affair, you know?
You're right.
He has his moments, though. See, he's flawed. By and large, there's a lot of schmucks in Dylan, parent-wise. They're at least three-dimensional. They're flawed characters. You know, they're not just waxing the mustachio bad guys. They're just flawed. Except for maybe Joe McCoy.
He's just bad. He's very full. Okay, guys, I'm sorry. There's more. Tammy does this, which I like. She has all the girls come together, and she's going to talk about what the effects of alcohol and what it does. I had this in high school, and they showed us, like, it was sort of the VR video of what you see through your body and how many drinks and how much slower your reaction time is and blah. It was more for, like, drunk driving was the big thing when I was younger. But I get this, and I think it's important. It sucks. I thought later it was really, really boring. A girl gets disruptive, and Tammy says, "You don't deserve to have this conversation." She pulls the girl out of the meeting. To me, what she's doing there is saying, you don't deserve this information. So when you go out to a party next time, you're not armed with the information these girls are going to get. Instead of, hey, you know what? Not only do you have to sit through this, you have to write me a 5-page essay about the effects on alcohol so I know you heard it. She said, you don't deserve to have this conversation, and kicked her out. I don't understand what Tammy's head is doing this episode.
I get where you're coming from on that. I mean, the true punishment would be making that girl sit through that boring seminar or whatever.
Sit through three times.
Sometimes you got to make a scene, maybe, to make these kids realize the severity of the situation.
I'm on such a weird train. We're always like, Tammy's always right. Tammy's always right. Guys, for me, Tammy is very wrong this episode.
I mean, we kind of covered this already, but I had written down in my notes, are you upset that we aren't seeing Tammy come after the boys as hard as she's coming after the girls? Is that, by and large, what your problem is?
In an overall arc, yes, but not in this scene. I like that this is just the girls having this conversation because I think it could be learning about the effects of it. And then they could also talk about, oh, this happened to me in a safer space. I like this, girls. I don't like taking a girl out of what you're supposed to be teaching her to save herself. I don't understand it.
I get it.
We don't need to harp on it.
No, I get where you're coming from. That's fair.
Moving on. At least I see Coach taking the video seriously-ish.
Yeah.
Seriouser?
Well, I think he's taking it very serious.
Yeah.
You don't think he's taking it serious? I think he's taking it very seriously.
I don't think anyone has taken it as seriously as they need to, but I'm glad Coach is like, he's not having it.
We start that scene with those guys all running suicides as a direct result of that video, basically saying, you have to be better. Luke says at one point, Coach, why are you going after us? We didn't do anything wrong. There were a ton of people at that party. And Coach's point is, I don't care that there were a ton of people at that party. You guys have to be better. It wasn't a football player that was doing this, taking advantage of Mara when she was drunk. But they were there and they didn't do anything about it. And I think that's what Coach's response is.
Yeah, you guys have to be a little bit better than everybody else.
I'm holding you to a higher standard because you represent this school.
I like it.
So I think they're taking it seriously.
I think they're taking it seriously. I don't think they're taking it the way I want them to take it. Julie is invited to a salon. It sounds incredibly fancy, but maybe not the greatest idea. She just got a C on a paper, and this guy is like, oh, instead of, you know, taking that C, come to my fancy salon and talk smart stuff.
You know, I never got invited to a salon while I was in college. What the hell is a salon exactly?
A salon. You know, like Dorothy Parker in the Round Table, or like the Algonquin Round Table, and it was just a bunch of really smart writers, and they would sit around and talk about really smart things. A salon. It's very fancy.
It's where they took the smart kids.
It's where the smart kids go. It's the smart kids table.
Maybe that's why I was never invited to one.
That's why you never went to a salon. Listen, I went to the University of Manchester, and even those smarty pants that I studied with would not talk like that at a party. I fully don't get that those students at that school were talking that way about literature, and it was just a little like, I'm taking issue with this episode, guys. I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm biting the hand that feeds me. I'll be better next episode.
I will say, I mean, I never went to a salon, but I definitely went to numerous theater parties when I was in college, and there were definitely some pretentious douchebags at some of these parties that were over in the corner talking shop.
According to the video, what may be you?
Maybe I was the pretentious one. No, I doubt that highly.
We did love to talk about theater, though. We love to talk about acting and plays and theater.
Yeah, I mean, that seemed very real to me. I gotta say that when I was in college, and I think some of this was partially because it was Baylor, and Baylor is a little bit more, you know, conservative. We didn't really interact on a social level at all with our professors outside of class.
Yeah, we did one fancy dinner with the dean because if we had won like an award.
Yeah, we would do that.
But then you didn't get to talk to him after that.
No, I mean, there was never a situation where we were in a social setting having drinks of any kind.
No,
with
never.
Professors. Like, not at Baylor. But I know other colleges, like there are kids, especially, look, the theater department is very different than a lot of other departments. I mean, we were definitely very social with our professors.
Yeah, that's true.
And I got to know them all very well, and I'm still to this day, like, good personal friends now at this point with at least two of the professors that I had in college. I literally talked to one of them the other day, a guy named Dr. Steve Peters, who directed me in multiple productions when I was in college, and, you know, he would call me when I was living in New York, and we'd go have dinner and drinks together. Like, we did that after college. But we definitely didn't do that while I was in college. Like, that seems extremely inappropriate. I think there was a much more of a distinction at Baylor between professors and students. Grad students, teaching assistants.
Yeah, it's different,
a little
right?
bit different. Because we had grad students at Baylor, too, and they
gray lines.
Were, you know, there were a couple guys there that were in their 30s that were dating underclassmen.
Yep.
And that was a little weird. And I always found it a little gross.
It's always like that with the TA.
Yeah.
But, like, also, I think the scene is for us to find out that TA has a wife.
Yeah.
And when we find out, I just know in my gut that Julie's going to do something really stupid.
Oh, you know that.
Like, you're giving me this information, so I know something bad's going to happen. There's no other reason I need to know that that guy has a wife. None of my business. I would like to ask, did you simultaneously in that locker room give an actor who probably didn't have a character name a name and shout out Chris Moreno?
I did, actually. So, yeah, one of my best friends on the planet and one of my best friends since I was probably 14 years old is a guy named Chris Moreno. So there are a couple times on this show where I've said something about Moreno or...
We talked about him last episode.
Yeah, I literally call a guy Moreno in this scene.
I love it.
Just as a shout out to my buddy Chris. Also to make sure he was watching the show. If he didn't call me and be like, dude, the next day I'd be like, wow, okay, somebody's not watching my show.
But also that actor can go on his IMDb credit and have a named character now because of you.
Yeah, probably. I don't think he got any more money out of it.
No, that's nice.
But yeah, I would do that occasionally, and I'm sure the writers were not big fans of it.
It stayed in. It can't be that bad.
Yeah. I guess.
This is my last Tammy talk. The talk now is, so she got caught making out or doing worse things in a closet. The talk that Tammy has now is, you're going to get a reputation. She's saying, if you do this, people are going to call you a slut. Instead of what I would say is, hey, what's going on at home? Why are you acting this way? Why do you think this is the only attention you deserve from boys? Not, you're going to get called a slut. I am taking so much umbrage with the way Tammy has handled everything in this episode. And boy, am I probably going to get some hate mail for it.
I hear where you're coming from.
But also, that boy doesn't get a talking to. Boy gets to walk away and nothing happens. It's fine.
But it goes back to the idea that there is a double standard. You don't have to like the fact that there's a double standard, but there is a double standard. Like I was saying earlier with that hypothetical situation with my daughter. I don't have a daughter. But if I had a daughter, I would have to have this kind of conversation with her. And yes, I mean, there's probably a better way of handling it than just saying you're going to get a reputation and people are essentially going to call you a slut. But that's exactly what is going to happen. If you're okay with that, then so be it. You know what I mean? But there will be a double standard for the boy. It's unfortunate. It's messed up that that's the case, but that's exactly how it's going to be. That guy's going to get to go high-five his friends, and every girl in school and every guy in school is going to call you a slut and a whore, and it's not fair, but that, unfortunately, is the way that the world is.
I feel like that's not the story that the writers were trying to tell in this episode. It's the story we're placing on it so that it has more meaning. I have a lot of issues with this one.
On a strictly narrative level, the story that I feel is being told is that this situation happened with the video. Coach goes and talks to the boys. Tammy goes and talks to the girls.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the narrative situation. The vibe I'm getting is that you're upset because the boys aren't getting their fair share, but I think they're getting it from Coach, We're not getting every boy in the high school. We don't know who that kid is. We've never seen that boy before. So there's no reason on a narrative level.
It's not my issue. It was just this scene when I'm like, Tammy, also tell that boy not to do that in the closet before you tell the girl that she's going to be a slut. My umbrage with this episode is Tammy in every situation has said the wrong thing. It's not about the boys at all. It's about you let the boys do that to you. You don't deserve to have this conversation. Everyone's going to call you a slut. And never, hey, what's actually going on with you? Why are you doing this? I want to know how you feel.
Gotcha.
That's it. And then.
All right.
To keep sticking it to the children that we love here, this TA, yes, absolutely, TA, what you should do is you should talk about your marriage troubles to this, 17-year-old girl in your class.
I mean, I'm guessing she's 18. Not that that makes it okay. It's still
disgusting. She might be 18.
Yeah, it's gross.
I mean, that makes like maybe a bit of a legal difference, but it's still gross.
Yeah, but this guy's he's a well-dressed, well-spoken slimeball.
Yo, yeah, he knows.
I don't think he knows. I think that even in the casting of it, they kind of tried to present him as this guy who's, you know, kind of dreamy. And it's like, no, dude, I don't like him.
I don't like him.
Married, buddy. You're an older man. Like, you have power over this girl.
Yes, you're
like,
in a position of power over her.
Dude?
You graded her paper.
Yeah, it's just shady. It's
but
so
to, like,
super
tell,
shady.
To tell her, this young girl, about your marriage trouble, and then I screamed, Julie, no, because I knew she was going to kiss his face.
I also got pissed off in this scene, too, because Julie is the one who made the first move. And I'm like, what are you doing, Julie? I don't like this whole storyline. I don't like any of it.
I feel like it's going to get worse, too. I'm so scared. Because I was like, oh, they're kissing. And then I was like, oh, they did more than kiss. Oh, God.
Oh, it's going to get worse.
Oh, God. Yeah. Bad things are happening.
None of it's cool. It's all a mess.
It's cool. God. Okay, Vince is not playing around with Dad. I'm still in that place of I don't know how to feel about this, but I feel like this story is going to somehow break my heart because I'm in that place again of I need Vince to have a win.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but yes, aspects of this story are definitely going to break your heart. I mean, it's tough. This whole relationship is very convoluted. There's a lot, as I said, a lot of history between these two.
Oh, man. Okay, but in the land of bad fathers and adults not maybe doing perfectly with the children in a lot of aspects, there's coach and he's doing right with his kids. And the relationship that I see Coach and Vince forming, which like this one took a while, but I really like it.
I also thought this was just a great scene between the two of them. Vince is a good kid, but there's an inferno of emotion raging underneath the surface, and I just love how Michael B. channels that energy in this scene. I'm 47 years old, but I forget sometimes, now that I'm older, just how emotional it was being a teenager. And that's what I love about this show. There are these moments where you're like, God, I haven't felt that way in forever, but I remember having that anger.
The hormones, that frontal lobe is not fully formed yet, but it felt so incredibly important at the time. Looking back, you're like, oh, yeah, it was really important. It's not now.
You don't know how to cope with things at that age. As you said, you've got hormones just raging through your body. You're still very much a child, but you're dealing with very adult situations.
Yeah.
You haven't had the experience or the opportunity at this stage of your life to deal with these things.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful thing that we talk about as an actor is, you know, what's the first emotion you feel? I feel like the trap for a lot of actors is to just immediately go to anger or rage. And I think that's exactly what Vince is doing here, but it's perfect for Vince to do that.
Oh, yeah, in this
moment.
He's
hurt by what's happening with his father, and so he reacts with rage.
But he can't name other feelings yet because he doesn't, like, have the information.
Exactly. And in real life, when you think about it, when you get angry, when you go punch a wall or whatever, what's the real emotion that you're feeling?
It's not anger.
The real emotion is probably somebody hurt you, somebody, you're sad because somebody did something that
it's hurt,
that affected
it's
you.
It's fear. It's, there's all the reasons for doing it. Yeah. Therapy is fun.
Anger's the easy emotion.
Anger's the masking emotion for the things that are actually under it.
Yeah.
It's hard to name sometimes. Woof.
I can't imagine a situation in my life now where I would react the way that Vince does, but I remember being that age, and I remember reacting that way.
Yeah.
You know? Where you got to punch something. You want to hit something. You want to throw
gotta
something.
Got to let it out.
Yeah. Really beautiful scene by the two of them. Just like you said, I'm really loving this relationship with him and Coach.
They just have chemistry together, too, as actors.
They do.
It makes me really happy.
Yeah. good actors, man. It's good actors.
They're good actors. That's what we love about this show. It brought me back to my love for Friday Night Lights after I had a little escape off the freeway, and I'm back. I'm back, guys. I love my show. Me and Tammy just sitting in the stands, you know, two coaches' wives, just doing what they do.
I personally love, as an actor, that you got stuck in the stands now because Billy's on the team. Like, Billy's a coach, and now you, Stacey Oristano, have to come out every Friday night. You're not allowed to have Friday nights anymore. You have to be in the stands working with the rest of us. And that makes me happy.
It starts this episode, and it never goes away.
While shooting Friday nights was fun, it was also, like, I'd like a Friday night again.
It was long.
Yeah, it was long nights. A lot of stuff to cover.
You guys were stuck on the field, man. Us in the stand, we got to go away and go to the Mexican restaurant, have a margarita, come back, sit in the stands. I'm not complaining.
You got wrapped way earlier than I did.
Hours.
That was one thing that sucked. Like, I was excited to become a coach, and then we had to shoot all the football stuff. And I'm like, my days got way longer, and I didn't have any more lines. I was just there as basically a glorified background actor, but they had to have me there. I want to go back real quick to our Tammy discussion, because I have one other thought here, and I just wanted to pick your brain on it.
Yep.
Do you think that maybe some of the frustration that you're feeling is also a fact, and this is a good thing, I think, that the world has changed a lot since this show aired? I mean, we've had the whole entire Me Too movement. Do you think that maybe some of your anger at this episode is coming from the fact that, like, we're trying to solve this in a 2008 way, and the world has changed since, or I guess 2009 way?
I am giving a bit of grace for that. Yeah, we weren't talking in the same way to girls, especially, or to victims. And she is a victim, but maybe in 2008, we wouldn't look at her as a victim, which breaks my heart, but maybe that's the world that we were living in. That's what my grace is given in this episode and in the writing.
Yeah.
You're right, yeah.
Stacey, I just rewatched Entourage the other day.
Oh, jeez.
And I gotta tell you, I mean, there are some cringeworthy moments on that show where this was a hugely popular show. That is how different the world is from 2004, and even when the show ended around 2013 or something like that. The world is massively different.
Even Steve Carell says that about The Office.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't do The Office today the way that they did it back then, because the world is different. So yeah, I'm looking at it with new eyes.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes we get a little too sensitive about things, but by and large, there's been some massive good changes that are made. I mean, just the stuff that I think women had to deal with in life and on film sets and in general, you know?
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. I'm going to take that. I can look at this as the growth from then into now. Instead of being in a place of anger about it, look at how far we've come. I think that's a way better way to look at this whole episode.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I was just legit wondering if that might be part of the reason, you know, because I look at it and you're exactly right. When she's in that scene saying, basically blaming her for her actions, it's like, look, this person is a victim here. You know, she may have done something stupid in getting drunk, but getting drunk doesn't mean that, you know,
you deserve
people
that.
People get to put their hands on you.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe we can look at it as growth.
Yeah. I think we have as a society changed a little bit when it comes to that there is a little bit more onus put on the men in the situation, the men who are doing the stuff that's wrong, you know?
It is happening.
Slowly but surely.
Slowly.
Anyway, sorry to jump on that, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on
it. I like looking at it as gross instead of just my umbrage. I also just like saying umbrage, I'm not going to lie.
Because there are things in general, just on this show, I think there was an episode where one of the characters said retard.
Yeah, it's just stuff like that you're like, you can't do that now.
No, but when I was a kid, retard was what you called a kid who was mentally challenged, you know? And it wasn't a derogatory thing, but over time it became a derogatory thing and it became an expletive, essentially. And it wasn't when I was a child. It's just how you referred to somebody who had Down syndrome. Now when you hear it, it's like, oh, it's like nails on a chalkboard. Yeah. And I think it was Matt Saracen who said it in one of those episodes. And it was
Matt wasn't
even a bad guy that said it. And there's an innocence behind it because back then, even 13 years ago, I don't think it had the same kind of weight that it does now.
Yeah.
Or 14 years ago, whatever it was.
Look at us growing and evolving as people. You know, he's not growing and evolving. Stacey is the king of segues. This TA, just another adult treating young people badly, wanted to throw my remote at my brand new TV, but I did not.
You and I can totally agree on this one. I have zero sympathy for this guy. What he did is completely and totally immoral. It's wrong. It's messed up. And on top of it, he's married. What are you doing? She's a child. I can't stand it.
he's like, we shouldn't do this again, but I don't know, but I'm guessing they probably do it again.
I don't remember if they do it again, to be honest with you, but I do know we get to meet his wife at one point.
I'm ill prepared for that.
So it's going to get ugly. Okay. It's going to get ugly.
I like this scene with Vince and his dad. It's filled with pathos and levels of feelings and whatever, but also just, my God, Kress is a wonderful actor.
He really is. I know I said it earlier, but I love how FNL creates these three-dimensional characters. I started this episode hating Ornette. I really did. But by the end, I'm feeling for this guy. Even though I know that he's going to be a massive hurdle for Vince, and I love Vince, I think Vince's dad truly wants to be back in his family's life. But just like so many other flawed characters on FNL, he winds up doing more harm than good.
I think he cares. He cares about his son.
I think he does. It's like Billy cares. Billy cares about Mindy. Billy wants to do right by Mindy, but Billy winds up doing illegal stuff to care about his way. You know, and so many of these characters are their own worst enemies.
You're right there. That's just three-dimensional. They're fully fledged people.
Yeah. So there's a part of me that I forgot that, like, I actually do care about Ornette. He's made a lot of mistakes. He's got a lot of change that he's going to have to make in his life. You know, I got to say, I started this episode hating Ornette, and by the end, I'm feeling for him. And that's one of the things that I think Friday Night Lights does so well. You've got all these characters that are extremely flawed, but they wind up doing more harm than good. They're kind of their own worst enemies.
You want to root for him anyway.
Yeah. I'm kind of amazed at the way that this episode started, that by the end, I'm actually rooting for Ornette and rooting for Vince in that relationship.
Complicated.
Yeah, very complicated. This was a complicated episode, Stacey.
This was a complicated episode. You guys can write me emails and tell me thoughts. I actually am genuinely interested what you guys think too.
Fascinating to watch how maybe the world has changed over the last 15 years. I'm constantly fascinated by that. You know, there's some things that are 100% right on the money with Friday Night Lights, and then there are times where things happen, and as we said, there's stuff that you watch and you're like, that doesn't necessarily ring true today. Hopefully that's how you grow as a society and change as a society.
We hope so, but that is it for Season 5, Episode 3.
Join us next time for Season 5, Episode 4, entitled Keep Looking. But until then, clear eyes,
full hearts,
can't lose.
Clear Eyes, Full Hearts is a podcast presentation of Blackbird Media and Ritual Productions.
Executive producers are Stacey Rastano and Derek Phillips, Chris and Mindy Wimmer for Black Barrel Media, and Steve Walters for Ritual Productions.
Our producer is Miranda Parham.
Send your questions to queereyesfullheartspod@gmail.com.
And follow us on social media. I'm on Instagram at Stacey Rastano.
And I'm also on Instagram at _DerekPhillips.
Check us out on YouTube and blackbarrelmedia.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.